This is Rabbi Moshe Eisenman from Baltimore.
Right.
Okay. When did you come to the to learn Barabbas? What year?
I think it was in the year 1952.
Where did you come from?
From Gateshead.
From Gateshead. And what, how old were you then?
I was 22.
22. So you were learning several years in Gateshead before you came here.
6 years in Gateshead, yeah.
Okay. What motivated you to come here?
Well, I had the choice at the time to either go to Eretz Yisrael or some of my Chaverim did, or to come here. I decided to go to Lakewood because my cousin, Moshe Eisenman, was here. So that attracted me to over here.
Did you ever hear, what did you hear about Rabban before you came?
Same as everybody, you know. I mean, nothing very special.
Your experience is just as important as anybody else.
I really hadn't heard much about. I mean, everybody knew the name, but nothing which I could record.
Okay, so you came here. What was the experience in the first meeting? You went to Rosh Hashiva or what?
Well, my brother-in-law, was Mr. Ernst Bodenheimer, who is not alive anymore, and who was very close to Rosh Hashiva. So when I came from England, so I first spent about a week with them in New York. And so he told me that one evening, why don't you come along? You can see all the Rosh Yeshivas in the country. He took me to a Torah Masorah dinner. And that's where I saw the Rosh Yeshiva for the first time. I mean, you know, I went over and said Shalom Aleichem, introduced myself, but that's about all.
Okay, then what?
Then, I don't know exactly how I got in, because I was supposed to say some Torah for the Rosh Yeshiva. Somehow he was going to give me a shahir or something.
Yeah.
But I had some Torah written up and it didn't come. It was the baggage was lost. Anyway, there's some way, somehow, that never happened. And I was in without having any kind of shahir.
Okay, so what was the initial experience in yeshiva? How did you...
experience, that's not the Rosh Yeshiva, but that's when I came. So I went to Moshe Eisenman and he said, I said hello, and then I said, no, so I'd like to go to my room now. Where's my room? So he called up the fellow who was in charge of the rooms, and he said, listen, my cousin, my Scheisman, just came from England. He'd like to have his room. So he said, as yet we come from England, and we'll schenk and schlossen. That was my rather inauspicious welcome to but, there was a...
Then what was your introduction with the Rosh Yeshiva himself? Was any more introductory experience?
I don't really think so. I never really had a very close relationship with him. By davening, I used to stand sort of towards the center of the Beis Hamedrash, sort of more or less opposite the Rosh Yeshiva, you know, about in the, you know, five or six lines back. And one day he called me over. And he mussed me for dreaming during davening.
Were you surprised?
Well, yeah. So when I told it over to Moshe Eisenman, I said, no, du hast ihm gefragt, der Kasche. So I said, no. So he said, that's what he wanted. And I was, you know, this was, I guess, his way of being mekarev with me. And of course, I didn't know exactly. Gateshead was very different to Lakewood.
In what way? Was it different?
You know, those were the years when nobody traveled. We in all the 6 years in Gateshead, we'd never been out of England. This whole, it was a yeshiva for English boys. And I came to Lakewood. It was a totally different world. I had no idea how to relate to the Rosh Yeshiva in any, you know, in a normal way. And so anyway, I didn't take the hint. So I got the Musa, but I didn't use it.
No, what I mean to say is, one thing that you mentioned is that I found characteristic with the Rosh Yeshiva. A lot of people told me this, that he was aware of everything.
Yeah, well, he was aware.
Yeah.
He was aware, and so he mustered me.
That was the Mossad, that.
Yeah, I don't know how many people can say that they were Mossad by the Russians, but anyway, that's my claim to fame.
Very good. I wish I was Mossad like that. Yeah, so what other, about the Seder Yeshiva, the things that you would think everybody knows.
Very, very, very different. You know, the whole of Lakewood, there's absolutely no comparison to Gateshead. In Gateshead, we were good boys, and we came to the Storim, and at night, when I came to Yeshiva, hardly anybody was by night Seder. So I thought to myself, all the terrible things they said about America must be true. It took me a while to figure out that they were all learning in their rooms.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was a different thing. This was a grown-up yeshiva, not like I was used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while. And, there wasn't the same closeness among the people.
Uh-huh.
A fellow told me for 2 years he was in Lakewood.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he had to ask one of the younger lights something.
Yeah.
So he went over to him and asked him, and the guy looks at him and says, "I must have seen you somewhere before." He says, "Oh, I remember. We once davened mincha together in New York in a shtiva."
You mean he was in the yeshiva
for 2 years there? For 2 years he was in the yeshiva. Yeah.
That's typical.
That's how it was.
Yeah. Well, even American boys felt the same way.
Yeah.
A lot of them. I mean, they felt that it was like very cold.
Yeah. But the Rosh Hashiva was very close to some. You know, he was Rebellious Pearl. He used to call him Willie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was from the big heads at the time.
Uh-huh.
Yanker Schiff, of course, we had a lot of circles. So, in fact, when I went to I came from England, so after about 2 or 3 years, I went back to meet my present wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Rosh Hashiva arranged, I think it was the Rosh Hashiva, that a few people should come and see me after I was on the boat in New York, to come and, to make sure that I come back.
Uh-huh.
So Rav Schneer came, and Rav Yankel Schiff, and a few others.
So he was concerned that...
He was very... Like, Rosh Hashiva, he was... In the first year... my father paid some form of tuition or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then after a while he felt that he really couldn't anymore, and I went to Rosh Hashiva and he said, "Just don't worry about it."
Yeah. He took care of it. So what was the Siddurim like?
Look, on that occasion, when my brother-in-law, Ernst Bodenheimer, took me to the Torah Mesorah dinner, so it was interesting that after the dinner we gave a ride back to Brooklyn to Rav Kalmanovich, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So he asked me, "Who am I?" So I said, "My name is Moshe Eisenman." He says, "Where do you come from?" I said, "I come from Gateshead." And he said, "No, where are you going to learn?" So I said, "In Lakewood." So he said, "Keiner kann ich verstehen, was yeshiva." Nobody understands the shiva.
Uh-huh.
So here, why don't you come to the mir? We have a shiva. Rav Ginsberg never was gone. He was not allowed anymore. And you'll have a rabbi. You'll understand. So I was laughing my head off, and I said, "Little does he know what a bright guy I am. And I surely will understand the shiva." But of course, after a few weeks, I saw that he was right. I mean, the shiurim were, in a real sense, way beyond me.
Most people say that.
Yeah. I tell you what, I began to understand some of the shiurim, whatever I remembered, when I started teaching in Philadelphia. So when I was learning the same sugyas, and I remembered in some things what Rashi had said, so then I began to understand the oimek of what he meant. But at that time, it really was...
But that was typical.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, from what I heard, very few people said, one or two didn't mention that, but almost everybody mentioned that they, for months, they would go around not understanding, but they were so... But another thing is they said about the certain manner that he had when he learned was, like, very captivating.
Very captivating. He's one of the most beautiful people I ever saw. I mean, he had these childish eyes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's really something. You know, these blue eyes.
Yeah.
And his whole face, he was just a very, very overpowering personality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether anybody mentioned this to you, but especially on Yom Kippur, when like Kriyashma and things like that, like his whole face, it was glowing. It was very, very...
Yeah, these are, people mention things like that
yeah.
in different aspects, but every time somebody says it over, I want that little bit difference.
Well, that is, I mean, like, you know, it's a face that you can never forget. I you know, with all his godliness and with all his age and his power, he always struck me as a childish kind of tmimus. I mean, he looked at you with his eyes and he smiled. You know, it was just a very... I don't think I've seen that by anybody else. But,
uh-huh.
I heard once Shia from on tape from Rav Yosef Ben Soloveitchik from YU.
Yeah.
So he talked about that Chazal that Sorah was when a male Chokma
right.
and then
yeah.
and also the Yoshi, whatever it was, right?
Yeah, right.
So Rav Yosef said that the word is that she had all these kaichas. He says, for learning, you need the chachma of a sage, of an old man.
Uh-huh.
But for davening, is that you need the tmimus of a child.
Uh-huh.
And I understood that extremely well when I remembered the Rashima.
Uh-huh.
Because it seemed to me that there was this tmimus there. It's just a very, very unusual person.
And okay, in terms of how he made impression on you. How did that? You must still feel the effect.
Well, you know, I learned certain things from him. There was a time when for some reason or other, Rabbi Robertson wasn't there, so there were always two younger lads who were supposed to go with him to New York to be mm-hmm. Meshameshem.
Right.
And I had that thing once. I was there with him.
Yeah.
I don't remember who was there with me.
What was the occasion, do you remember?
Over a period of weeks or months or something like that, there was a seder in the yeshiva that two guys went in and,
right, right.
and were with him. And,
so how many times did you do that?
Once.
Only once?
Yeah, but that was very remarkable.
Uh-huh.
We started off in the office. In New York, and I sat with his Gemara, talking on the phone, and learning in between each breath. And that day was an unbelievable day. It was like he ran from one thing to another. He had to give a shiur to several rabbonim, and then he went somewhere else to a meeting, and somewhere else. It was just an unbelievable day. So when we got home at night, we finally got to his home. So he was too exhausted to eat.
Uh-huh.
So he says he's going to rest up a little bit on his bed. So he took a riff on Masechta Sukkah. It was shortly before, there was an Elul maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he started learning the riff on Masechta Sukkah. Like, he didn't have the koyach to learn the Gemara.
Mm-hmm.
So he learned the riff as a halacha psuka. He exhausted himself. But even in those few moments, he didn't take the time to really rest. But he was learning. He was learning, as I say, the riff. But the joke was the next morning. I was supposed to be there to Meshameshem.
Yeah.
But the day before had exhausted me, so I overslept. So I heard him sort of under my tail. I heard him asking my partner. I said, "Who is my Scheisman?" So he says, "Schlaft." Just oh, vermachtet hier, nicht läuft weg. So,
he was able to feel with the other person.
Yeah, yeah. I was supposed to be making his breakfast, and he was worried that I shouldn't wake up.
Mm-hmm. But he realized that he was. But these things that he did, that looked like he was doing it, like with a, it says Begiba Kari, Shnei used to say, an Ari gets up like an Ari, he doesn't have to do an effort for it. That's how it is.
Right. It was that day was really, you know, between us, Godel Shimush from Yosef Melimuda.
Yeah.
I mean, in the taxis, yeah?
Yeah.
It was like Posik Kumimigyasa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throughout the day, he was learning, he was chazaving, he was. There was not one moment, Kimat, mm-hmm. which wasn't sort of used for learning.
Uh-huh.
Really, it was an emes shemush of a yid, how a yid is supposed to live.
So I guess that must made a lasting impression.
So
you know, if a person sees that, he knows where he has to go.
Right.
He knows what the derech is, where you have to, what madregas have to be reached.
Right.
So it shows that it's possible. So I guess what other experiences like that you had that you could relate, maybe.
Look, I tell you, I didn't have that much. You know, I was had a moral mikdash.
That's something too.
Uh-huh.
That itself is an experience.
Yeah. Anyway, the funny experience, well, not so funny, was when ultimately I went to England, I got married, and then I learned a couple of more years, and then I got an offer to teach in Philadelphia.
In the yeshiva.
In the yeshiva, right.
Yeah.
So I spoke to a yeshiva about it. And he was very, very, very insistent that I should not go.
Not go?
Yeah, das sitzen lernen, das sitzen lernen, of course. You know, he wanted me to continue learning.
Yeah.
But I wanted very much to go. So in the end, I asked the Nossen to make a Gorn's Geibel for me.
Yeah.
And that came out rather interesting.
Yeah.
With a posuk in Tanakh. No, unimportant now what it was. But so I came to Rosh Yeshiva and told him about it. Nein, he says, the Gorn's Geibel, it's only a Chumash really, and Tanakh is not really the Geibel, it's the main Gornish. And the word was that the Geibel was in, the Pasuk did not reveal anything, uh-huh. except the Drosh's Chazal on the Pasuk revealed.
Uh-huh.
So he said, no, as the state Tunish, he wanted me to go on learning, the kids.
Yeah. So they said that he made the same thing before he came to America.
Yeah,
they said, after I heard this on different tapes, they mentioned this. He made the Goyen's Geirul, but to go to Eretz Yisrael or to go to America. So there's something that says, Vayelech Aaron El Moshe, something like that. So he said, so I have to go to Moshe Feinstein.
Yeah, I heard that.
I don't know. That's what I heard. I don't know if it's true, but they say it. I heard it on the tape just this week. Yeah. Somebody
he
mentioned.
Was very, very stark that I shouldn't go. But then when he saw that I wanted to go, he gave me his brochures and everything.
Was it like that with everybody? Or with certain people he said stay and certain people said go?
I don't know. I can't tell you. See, you're not picking that up from what I'm saying. But the truth is, I was always a stranger in Lakewood. You know, I was never part of the family, really. I came from Gates. It was altogether different.
Uh-huh.
I had friends, and you know, but you know, to know what was like Moshe Heinemann, that he knew every tenor of the yeshiva. I never had that kind of relationship.
Well, he's special in that, so not everybody's like Moshe Heinemann.
Yeah, but I mean, even for example. Nosson Nussbaum now is a colleague of mine now here in the
I know, I'm supposed to interview him too.
He had a lot of shaykhs with yeshiva, yeah. She was involved in his shidduch. But, you know, I was there. I was there. And
so what year did you leave?
I must have left the Erech, 50. I came in 52, so after about 2.5 years I got married. Then I stayed another 2 years, 55, 56, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And went to Philly. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what you're just learning like with everybody else. I guess you also about the state of the yeshiva. How did that? What did you observe about that? The routine.
I told you that I didn't understand the shiur. So well, I was never. I think it was Yevamos. I didn't feel like learning Yevamos. So. With my chavrusa, who's now Kreis Yid in New York also, Yitzhak Finkel, we sat clandestinely and learned Erevin.
Mm-hmm.
So one day we were sitting there learning and Schneer came over and he caught us. Mm-hmm. I asked him, Schneer, he shouldn't make a fuss about it because I wasn't in the sugya, so we learned Erevin that year.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of things happened. There was a tkufa or the Tkufa, where the younger Leute, the movers and shakers, Willy Pearl and the others, mm-hmm. they decided that it was all too much for the Rosh Hashiva, and the younger Leute have to go out and raise money.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked it out with the Rosh Hashiva. So the Rosh Hashiva called me over mm-hmm. one day, and he said, look, it's your turn now, and you'll go to Pittsburgh this coming mm-hmm. week. So I told the Rosh Hashiva, listen, I cannot do it. I'm a total butler, and I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So Rosh Hashiva said, it's very easy. Why? Because there's Rabbi Shapira and Rabbi Pupko,
mm-hmm.
and one is going to take you around in the morning, and one is going to take you around in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and it's not going to be hard at all.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was all I went. So the Tucker, Rabbi Shapira took me in the morning, Rabbi Pupko took me in the afternoon. Each one of them once.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they were Shnei, Nevi'im, Nisnavim, Besignan, Echad. They both said to me, look, why don't you just sit in the car and we'll go in?
Mm-hmm.
And I made such a mess of it. I was so shy and so stuttery and so blushing
mm-hmm.
that they both decided that I wasn't doing much good. So that entire week, I sat in the car
mm-hmm.
and the two Rabbonim went in the morning and the afternoon and brought out the money. I told you I don't really have anything very.
Any other observations that you saw him personally, how he behaved or said shiurim that could. Well, you told me about how he was learning all the time, like Pasuk Pum Migirsa. And
I was in New York, yeah. Well, I didn't in Yeshiva, Dovnish Dovnish.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the video you heard, the same thing with everybody else. You remember?
No, I want to hear a repetition.
The stories which he used to say. I've told this over like a million times to Talmidim over here.
Yeah, yeah.
I asked him, somebody told you this story about Maril Diskin. That somebody showed him he had written a complicated tshuva.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked Rabbi Liskin to look it over. So he took it from him and he glanced through the papers and gave it back to him. So the guy asked him, "Nu zeh venut Rosh Hashiva Diskin zeh?" So he said, "I've seen it already," and he told him the number of the words.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked the Bochum, "Would you believe that?
Yeah.
That story?"
Uh-huh.
So they say no. So I tell them the emphasis. I also don't believe it. But I believe it because Rosh Hashiva said it over.
Uh-huh.
And if Rosh Hashiva held that it was possible.
Who said the number of words?
Maril Diskin.
On something else? So.
No, the guy had shown him a tshuva, let's say a 10-page tshuva.
Showed the Maril Diskin the tshuva.
Right, and asked him to look it over.
Uh-huh.
So he sort of leafed through it for a minute and gave it back to him.
Uh-huh.
So he asked him, "Nu, when are you going to look at it?" So he says, "I've looked at it already. I can already tell you the number of the tshuva."
Uh-huh. And the Rosh Hashiva told this over?
Yeah, the Rosh Hashiva told over. You know, he used to like telling stories
mm-hmm.
about, you know, on Yontes especially.
Right.
The big mussar which you learned from the Rosh Hashiva, I guess I'm sure that 500 people have told you the same thing.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
How every Friday evening when he came home from davening and he ate with the Bochum.
Uh-huh.
The first thing he always do was to go into the kitchen and say good Shabbos to the two Almanas who were
right.
The cooks.
Who were they?
I don't remember the names.
I don't remember. I know one was Berman, I think.
Berman, yeah. Berman and I don't remember the other one. I think they were sisters-in-law or something.
Mm.
But every Friday night he went in and he said good Shabbos to them.
Mm.
There was a...
Midas.
Yeah, then I remember him, how he sat in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, like, it was cold, but he wasn't making it at all in Shmini Atzeres, and mm-hmm. he sat the whole afternoon on Shmini Atzeres. It was the most impressive, the thing that stuck in the mind was on Simchas Torah night,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they made a sort of a kiddush or something in the dining room, in the other building.
I wasn't here during the other building.
The building they used to have there were whatever it was.
7th Street.
No, the yeshiva was in the 7th Street in Forest.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other building where the building is standing today, there was an old mansion.
Uh-huh.
So there they made the kiddush and then, 10, 11, whatever it was, the yeshiva went over for the hakofas.
Mm-hmm.
So So the whole oilam was there. I mean, those years, I don't know what it's like today, but in those years, the whole yeshiva came back for some pastoral.
Right.
And so the whole yeshiva danced him. They danced around, and Moshe Hirsch walked backwards in front of him.
The one from Slobodka.
What's that?
The one from Slobodka.
No, not Moshe Hirsch.
Oh, the other one, okay.
Moshe Hirsch from Tzurikata.
Yeah, okay.
So he carried a silver candelabrum and walked backwards in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
They were lighting the way for the Roshiva, and I remember that Roshiva was holding Yaakov Eliezer, like it was a little boy at that time. And, you know, it was a moment of very, very big dveikus. Now the Roshiva looked, then going towards the Hakofas after the Simcha of Shmini Atzeres. These were special moments.
Yeah, so these are important things to remember. Okay. Could you say anything about the total impression that he left you with, that you're living with today and you're giving over to your Talmidim?
Not really. Yeah, like I told you, I wasn't really a Talmid. I told you when you called me the other day by the Levaya.
Yeah.
When they said only the Talmidim can come into this Amedrash, everybody has to go to a different room. I went to a different room. I didn't hold myself for a Talmid.
But you could have gone.
Yeah, sure, I could have gone. I learned there for 5-6 years.
Yeah.
But I wasn't Isaac in his Torah. I wasn't Meinik in his Torah. My cousin, Moshe Eisenman.
Yeah.
The real Moshe Eisenman.
I know. What the real?
He knew everything down cold.
I know. I mean, I was told that many times.
And he was a Talmud.
Yeah.
Did I tell you the story about when Roshiva lost his notebooks on Layachta?
No.
That was before I came, but it was Meruvach in the yeshiva at the time. You know, the Roshiva had all the shiurim written up.
Right.
So apparently on the first part of Bava Basra, she lost one volume. So my cousin Moshe Eisenman had told me, and I know that, in the first 4 years that he was in Lakewood, he never went to sleep on the night of Roshia.
Roshiva?
No, Moshe Eisenman.
Okay.
And he spent the entire night writing up the Shia. After the Shia. You know, Roshiva used to say on Shabbos and then again on Monday.
Right.
So Moshe Shabbos, the Monday night, he stayed up the whole night writing up the Shia. So Roshiva knew that. And so when he lost his ksovim, he asked Moshe to borrow his. The only problem was that Moshe Taka wrote up all the shiurim, but he only wrote them up on one side. And on the other side, he wrote his asogas.
Right.
So apparently there were real fireworks then.
Yeah, I remember a lot of people told me they had several very big arguments with Roshiva.
He's the one whom the Rosh Hashiva told to do the tainus via shikar a Turk. Did I tell you that?
Nobody told me those words, but I heard.
You know, there was a hezbo. Rosh Hashiva said a hezbo. He said, why a shikar a Turk? He says, a shikar a, he doesn't know what he's saying, but we know what he's saying. A Turk, he knows what he's saying.
And we don't know.
We don't know what he's saying. Nicht du weißt, was du weißt, nicht mir weißt, was du
weißt. He gave his own taitch. Yeah. There's a very famous story that I heard over from Moshe Eisenman himself, Zal, that one time they had one of these arguments with Rosh Yeshiva, and he was upset, and Reb Nosson was in the hall, and he came out, so he says, he saw that Moshe Eisenman was upset, so he said, what are you upset about? He said, look, he said, Ich und du, he told me, he said, Ich am gelernt in TA, let's say, what he said at the time, you know, and why you, he said, so I have a little bit Goyishkeit. He says, and du hast gelernt in Frankfurt, was a bissel stick Deutsch. He says, aber der Yid, I'm an Ephanim by M the Hartz, von Gefinnen Noa Yidor. So we can't compare ourselves with him and think in the same mode.
They
I heard it several times, the story.
But they say again, I didn't experience this myself, but they say that after the Shikra Turk incident, so the Roshiva called him into the office afterwards to apologize. And Moshe, the Grace of Action, listened to Roshiva's apology, and then he said, "Yo, aber der Ran hat das doch aber fort nicht gesagt." You know, and then Roshiva started yelling again.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I heard this several times, different aspects about these.
Yeah. Anyway, that was, like I said, I'm a bad person to talk to because I really, how long was I there, Sachakar? 5-6 years?
So what?
And during that time, I really was never an insider. Mm-hmm. And
you don't have to be an insider. Even I heard stories somebody told me. Rabbi Baron told me, he says one time he was there, and Stama Balabas, one of the owners from the hotel, came and he said, "Who's that man?" So he said, "That man," he said, "is a very great man. I could see that this man is something outstanding." He just looked at him.
Yeah, well, that wasn't hard. I mean, he was a very special person.
Like this man didn't know anything about learning or anything. Just he saw his whole mannerism. He said, "This person is somebody great." You could see it just looking at him. And so these things add up to give the impression. But I never sent you the piece of paper I wrote, why I'm doing it and what's the basic purpose, but trouble is I didn't have it with me today, and it's on the computer. I could send it to you some other time.
Oh, don't worry. Look, you know, I've told you more or less what.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Seid gesund.
No. Amen. Gamos. Kol tov.